KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Lake Superior tribe in Wisconsin says a Canadian energy firm's plans to reroute an oil and gas pipeline will violate its water quality standards under the Clean Water Act. Danielle Kading has more.
Energy firm Enbridge wants to reroute Line 5 after the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa sued the company in 2019 to shut down and remove the pipeline from its lands. Line 5 carries up to 23 million gallons of oil and natural gas liquids daily from Superior to Sarnia, Ontario. Federal regulators signed off on the tribe's water quality standards in 2009. Bad River Tribal Chair Robert Blanchard says the reroute would harm the tribe's resources.
Because there's many more streams and tributaries and everything that runs towards Bad River, into Bad River, out into Lake Superior.
Earth Justice attorney Stephanie Sosi represents the tribe. She says it's possible blasting bedrock to install the pipe could unearth elements that could become hazardous when exposed.
The blasting materials themselves could be hazardous and introduce hazardous components to the water.
She says those may include PFAS, mercury, or other chemicals. An Enbridge spokesperson says the company is confident the project will not significantly impact water quality or exceed the tribe's standards. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
U.S. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski has introduced a bill that would officially designate North America's highest mountain as Denali, its Koyukon Athabascan name. The legislation would require that any reference in U.S. laws, maps, or other records refer to the mountain as Denali. This comes after President Trump's executive order to change the name back to Mount McKinley. Murkowski spoke about the mountain on the Senate floor last week, saying for Alaskans, it will always be Denali. She says her action follows the Alaska State Legislature, which recently moved a resolution urging the administration and the U.S. Board on Geographic Names to maintain the name. And as KMBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, the fight to preserve the name is an old battle.
If she were alive today, Pauline Carla would probably sing her Denali song to protest President Trump's executive order. Carla was in her late 90s when she performed her Denali song at a Dinakanaga Elders and Youth Conference. She had greeted President Obama with that same song when he visited Alaska in 2015, the summer his administration changed the name back from McKinley to Denali.
What I'm saying here is, say Denali, say Denali.
When it was named back to the original name of Denali, it just felt so good, and it was healing.
Angela Gonzalez remembers when Pauline sang that song for Obama. In her Athabascan Woman blog, she wrote about it and the joy she felt over the return of the ancient name.
Just the feeling of a great land and untold stories from our ancestors.
Angela's maiden name is Yatlin, which means runner, and refers to her family's long history of trading goods.
We definitely traveled a long ways.
Where the mountain was part of a long network of trails that went all the way from Siberia to California. And Denali, which means tall one in her Koyukon Athabascan language, was an important landmark. Angela says no matter what the president does, Denali will always be Denali. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at AARP.org.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
There's major implications of that sort of decision incoming, not just for Juneau, but for other communities around Alaska.
Fired federal workers describe ripple effects from losing their livelihoods. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, February 19th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, lawmakers in Juneau take an unconventional vote to move the education funding bill forward.
We had no other choice. There is a sense of urgency out there. The clock is ticking for a lot of our school districts.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at AlaskaMentalHealthTrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
President Trump's tariffs on China, imported steel and aluminum, and the now paused tariffs on Mexico and Canada could all have significant impacts on Alaskans, from the price of everyday goods to vastly increased costs for construction and seafood processing. That's according to two experts in economics and international trade who spoke on Talk of Alaska Tuesday. Greg Wolf is the president of the Alaska International Business Center and has been involved with international trade in Alaska for nearly 40 years. He said one of the biggest impacts on Alaskan businesses will be in industries where raw materials cross borders for manufacturing and processing. He gave the example of zinc from the Red Dog Mine.
When it arrives in Canada, there's a tariff. Then they ship the zinc back for American manufacturers, and guess what? There's at least a 10% tariff, maybe more, on that. So it's tariffed possibly twice. Mm-hmm. This is happening in seafood. This will happen in minerals.
The president has called these tariffs negotiating tools to get policies he wants from other countries, while he has also said these tariffs will get companies to move manufacturing jobs back to the U.S. Kevin Berry is chair of the economics department at the University of Alaska Anchorage. He said he sees conflicting priorities between those goals.
If these are a negotiating tactic, the implication is that they'd be risen, like they'd be removed if we got what we wanted. If we're thinking about the payback period for building a new factory or opening a new mine, right, the permitting process for a mine alone could be decades long. I just don't know any firms that are making decisions on a timeline that short and also spending hundreds of millions of dollars in capital.
Both Wolf and Barry agreed that any tariffs will result in higher prices for consumers. Federal workers in Juneau were among the thousands nationwide to receive layoff notices in their inboxes last week and over the holiday weekend. That's part of the Trump administration's continued efforts to downsize the government. KTOO's Claire Strempel reports on how residents are dealing with the layoffs.
Matthew Brodsky got his dream job in 2023. As a wilderness ranger for the U.S. Forest Service, he patrolled Tracy Arm Fjord by kayak in the summer season, monitoring environmental data and providing information to visitors aboard cruise ships. But last week, Brodsky says he and other Forest Service staff in Juneau were called into a meeting.
The bomb was dropped that 9 people were getting fired that day in Juneau, and it was the first wave of, you know, an indefinite amount of waves. And when it was all said and done, basically every single probationary employee in the Forest Service was going to be fired for the exact same reason.
His termination letter arrived on Sunday. The letter reads, in part, that based on his performance, his further employment at the agency would not be in the public interest.
Like, even knowing that was going to come, seeing that language show up and knowing for a month that I'm probably going to lose my job, it didn't really dampen the, like, how that read and what a slap in the face that was to actually see it in writing from some person I've never met and who has no idea the work I've done or my coworkers either.
Most federal employees must complete a one-year probationary period after they're hired. But Brodsky was hired under a Forest Service program aimed at people already in Alaska that included a two-year probationary period. For him, that period ends in June. He says some of his coworkers had just a few weeks left in theirs. Many of them are now struggling with whether to stay in Juneau.
I don't want to leave this community. I know people that probably will have to. There's major implications of that sort of decision incoming, not just for Juneau, but for other communities around Alaska.
Shortly after President Donald Trump took office last month, more than 2 million federal employees received an email from the Office of Personnel Management offering full pay and benefits through September in return for their resignation. But Brodsky and many of his coworkers didn't actually have access to the email when it was first sent out. They're seasonal and didn't return to pay status until this month. Nationally, some federal employees have reported being fired even after accepting the offer, though the Trump administration said Sunday that was a mistake. Requests for information about the total number of firings within the Tongass region were directed to the Forest Service's Washington, D.C. office, which has not responded. But a local union representative said 124 Forest Service employees across the state had been terminated as of Tuesday. According to a report from the Juneau Economic Development Council, Juneau had roughly 700 federal civilian employees as of 2023. In the Southeast region, more than 1,300 people were federally employed. And the layoffs weren't limited to the Forest Service. The National Park Service and Federal Highway Administration were also affected. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration employees in Juneau have been told to expect layoffs, too. More than 500 people rallied to demonstrate against the layoffs and other Trump administration policies outside the Capitol in Juneau on Monday as part of a nationwide protest. Among them were recently terminated federal workers and federal workers who feared for their jobs.
I work for NOAA, yeah, so I'm a little afraid.
One NOAA employee, who didn't give her name because she's afraid of retaliation, said workers received an email over the weekend that said it's likely that all probationary employees in her office will be let go. Anyone who's been with NOAA for less than a year.
You know, Alaska has a lot of subsistence people that need to understand how their weather and their climate and their environment's changing. And if we lose employees in NOAA or we cut back NOAA's power, they're not going to have those services.
But the loss of federal workers in Juneau ripples out into the private sector, too. Mike Heckers, a local guide in the summers, said he is upset about the layoffs.
There's going to be about 900,000 people coming to the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center area this summer, and there may be no services, nobody patrolling for bear issues, managing the buses and the taxis and the people.
Looking around at the dispersing rally, he said it was great to see so many people outraged, even as a torrent of changes come from the Trump administration.
It's discouraging, but we're going to keep fighting. We'll see what tomorrow brings, but I'm going to stay the course.
Brodsky, the former wilderness ranger, says he has no plans to leave Juneau at the moment. He's looking for other jobs, and he hopes he'll find something he loves as much as the last one. With help from Adeline Baxter, I'm Claire Strempel in Juneau.
A closely watched bill that would boost state funding for public schools took a step forward today. With Fairbanks Democratic Representative Maxine Dybert out battling an illness, the majority could not pass the bill out of committee along caucus lines. So they took the unusual step of moving it to the Finance Committee with a floor vote instead. House Speaker Bryce Edgman, a Dillingham independent, says it was necessary to keep the education bill on track to reach the governor's desk in March so districts can plan their budgets.
We had no other choice. There is a sense of urgency out there. The clock is ticking for a lot of our school districts.
Representative Rebecca Schwanke, a Taslina Republican who also sits on the Education Committee, argued lawmakers needed more time to debate the bill and consider changes.
If we have one more opportunity in our committee to actually take all of the questions, the thoughts, the ideas that came up in public testimony and debate the bill as committee members, take the vote, that actually allows us to complete the process. If we don't get that opportunity, I'm wondering what kind of tone that sets.
Representative Rebecca Hemshuda, Sitka Independent and Education Committee co-chair who sponsored the funding bill, says the bill has faced plenty of scrutiny from lawmakers and the public over the past month.
We had gone through the full process. We had considered amendments. We had done everything in committee. So there wasn't going to be another opportunity to discuss in committee. We had already done all of that.
The bill is scheduled for its first hearing in the Finance Committee tomorrow. It'll have to pass out of that committee before a final House debate and vote. The House majority said Monday that Dibert was in the hospital with a respiratory issue. Her chief of staff said today that Dibert's condition is improving, but did not have an estimate on when she would return. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a North Slope festival brings village residents together for dancing and fellowship.
It's like a healing part of us for coming out of the long, dark winter days. It brings us joy so that for the rest of the year we can carry it on.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how.
Get your weekly look at the trends, policies, and issues that impact your wallet in Alaska with the Alaska Economic Report. From local businesses to fiscal policy to big industries like fishing, tourism, and oil and gas, I'll cover the high-stakes economic issues that matter to Alaskans all over the state. That's the Alaska Economic Report with me, Ava White, on your local public radio station each week.
Two pedestrians were struck and killed by cars in Anchorage last night, and police say one of the drivers now faces murder and DUI charges. Police have not yet publicly identified either of the victims. They're the first two pedestrians killed by cars in Anchorage this year. Last year, 15 pedestrians were fatally struck, and that was the highest number in at least a decade. Police say the driver arrested last night, 30-year-old J.B. Matha, is charged with several crimes, including leaving the scene of an accident, as well as misconduct involving controlled substances and weapons. Officers had found a man struck and killed in a Minnesota Drive hit-and-run collision near Northern Lights Boulevard at about 9:45 p.m. A tip from a witness led police to Matha, who was taken into custody and held at Anchorage Correctional Complex. The fatal collision came about an hour after a woman was struck and killed on East Tudor Road near Lake Otis Parkway. Police say she had been walking in the roadway before a juvenile driver struck her. That driver remained at the scene and cooperated with officers. No arrests have been made in that collision. Anchorage parents could be held legally liable if their child brings a gun or other deadly weapon to school under a proposed assembly ordinance. East Anchorage Assembly member Karen Bronga introduced the ordinance. She says in the past three school years, the school district has confiscated dozens of deadly weapons from students, like knives and hatchets. She says officials have found roughly five firearms a year in the same period.
When I first looked at five, I'm like, well, that's kind of small, but it's kind of big because of the imminent danger that presents.
If the assembly passes the ordinance, prosecutors could charge a parent or legal guardian with a Class A misdemeanor if their child brings a deadly weapon to a school and there's proof that they provided the child the weapon or allowed them access through negligence. Bronga says the school district has done a number of initiatives in recent years to lay out responsible gun ownership and the importance of safe storage of firearms. But legally, the city can't mandate that storage.
We're not telling you can't have these things in your home. We're just saying if you have these things, that you need to check your kids because we can't charge them in a felony because of state law, but they will have a Class A misdemeanor if they show up at school with a dangerous weapon.
If convicted, the parent or guardian could face up to a year in jail and a fine of up to $25,000. There are caveats to the liability, such as if the parent or guardian reported the weapon stolen or had stored it in a reasonable manner. A school district spokesman declined to comment on the ordinance. In a statement from the Anchorage Police Department, officials said the ordinance contributes to public safety and responsible firearm ownership, and, quote, this holds parents accountable if they allow a child access to a firearm brought onto school grounds, reinforcing the importance of secure storage, end quote. Bronga says the ordinance will likely be voted on in early April. Juneau Democratic Representative Sarah Hannon introduced a bill that would impose a statewide tax on e-cigarette or vape products and raise the minimum purchasing age in Alaska. Versions of the bill have come before lawmakers multiple times in the past few years, and public testimony was divided. KTUO's Clarice Larson reports.
The minimum purchasing age for e-cigarette or vape products in the state could go from 19 to 21 years old. The proposal would also tack a 25% tax on those products. Tax money would go toward a new smoking prevention and education fund. At a House Labor and Commerce Committee meeting on Monday, members of the public weighed in. Lena Adase graduated from Anchorage's Diamond High School in May. She's co-president of Youth Encouraging Alaskans Health, or YAH, a tobacco prevention and education coalition. She supports the bill.
Whether it was in the halls, the classrooms, anywhere in schools, you would see students taking a hit of their vape. And at my high school, it got to a point where so many people were using these products in bathrooms that every single bathroom door in the high school had to be opened for like half of the school year.
Adeas says she worries that the prevalence of vape products among high school students is negatively impacting their overall health and academic success. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, vaping and nicotine addiction can harm adolescent brain development and lead to increased stress or anxiety. In 2023, nearly 20% of Alaskan high schoolers reported vaping over the prior 30 days. Roe Armstrong, co-president of YAH and another recent high school graduate, says the additional tax included in the bill could help prevent students from becoming addicted in the first place.
Once you're addicted to a substance, it's very hard to quit, and you will do a lot to get the substance that you're addicted to. So these price increases are going to stop more youth from starting because of their budget constraints.
Not everyone is on board with the bill. Sean DeSilva, owner of Fat Boy Vapors Alaska, argued vapes are a safer alternative to cigarettes, and the additional tax on products could push more people to take up cigarettes instead. Anchorage resident Mark Sundquist told the committee on Monday that the tax would drive people away from purchasing products from local retailers, and that patrons would instead get them illegally.
While the intention may be to discourage the use of e-vapor products, these tax rates would inadvertently make legal and regulated products more expensive. This, in turn, would create a price advantage for illicit products on the black market.
Juneau Democratic Representative Sarah Hannon is the House bill's sponsor. She says the sales tax is the point. They've been proven to reduce youth tobacco use, and she'd like to align state law with federal law. In 2019, a federal law raised the national legal age of purchasing, selling, or distributing tobacco products to 21 years old.
I certainly think that we want to make sure that we are regulating as best we can products that are legally for sale.
Kodiak Republican Senator Gary Stevens filed a similar version of the bill in the Senate. He's been a proponent of raising the minimum age for the past decade. On Monday, members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee voted 4-2 to advance the bill. It will next be considered by the House Finance Committee. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education. You can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. Every year, hundreds of nonprofits provide warm meals, safe places, and resources to hundreds of thousands of Alaskans. By supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD, you're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. This year, make more possible with the click of a button. Don't forget to give via PicClick Give when you apply for your PFD. This message sponsored by PicClick Give.
A collaboration between a Washington State nonprofit organization and a Northwest Arctic Health Association distributed thousands of pounds of salmon in Kotzebue last week. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports.
On a cold afternoon, a line of cars and snow machines idle in front of Manilik Health Center. Kotzebue residents wait to receive 5-pound bags of salmon. It's sockeye salmon, cut and vacuum sealed into individual portions. Employees hand out the bags to eager residents one at a time, while others unload and open 30-pound boxes of fish. The salmon is from SeaShare, a Washington State nonprofit.
The kind of the gist of it is to receive high-protein, high-quality, nutritious seafood to distribute to community members within our region.
Levi Gilbert works at Manelik's Special Projects Program. His department, along with Manelik's Diabetes Program, coordinated with SeaShare to distribute the fish. Gilbert says in total, over 7,000 pounds of salmon were handed out in Kotzebue. He says his department worked with Manelik's Elder Services and Hunters Program to distribute salmon to the community's elders beforehand.
So ensuring that those populations are receiving fish and likely going to be hand-delivered to their households.
Gilbert says Manelik Association has done similar fish giveaways in the past, but this was the first time working with SeaShare. According to its website, SeaShare began as a way to distribute bycatch, which are fish unintentionally caught while targeting other species. A representative from SeaShare said in an email that the fish was purchased from an unnamed Alaska seafood company. To date, the organization says it has distributed over 200,000 pounds of fish to over a dozen mostly rural Alaskan communities. Its goal is to address food security and supply chain issues to provide better access to Alaska seafood. Josh Fillable is a coordinator for Manelik's diabetes program. He says that the fish comes at a critical time, following a dismal salmon season.
A lot of people are used to eating salmon, but people weren't able to catch that much. People have said how excited they are to get this.
Last year, Kotzebue Sound's commercial salmon fishery experienced a dramatic crash, with one of the worst returns on record. Fillable says Manelik is working with SeaShare to coordinate additional seafood distributions in the region's outlying villages. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
A mythical blood-hungry plant is alive in the Kenai Performers rehearsal space. That, of course, is because the group is staging the cult classic Little Shop of Horrors. As KDLL's Hunter Morrison reports, the show brings actors and musicians together.
A drummer, a saxophonist, and other musicians from the Kenai Peninsula Orchestra play along to familiar tunes from the famous musical-turned-movie. They're seated just feet from actors who are on stage rehearsing for the upcoming show.
This show is so ridiculously over the top.
That's Terry Zoff Schessler, the show's director and choreographer. She says Little Shop of Horrors was the first show she directed when the theater troupe last staged it over a decade ago.
The music is so intricate and so much fun. The plot line is just campy, ridiculous, silly.
The show follows a struggling florist shop that acquires an unusual plant. A sentient, growing, talking, and singing plant. It brings success to the shop, but at a moral cost. It feeds on human flesh. Alyeska Garrett plays the role of Audrey, who experiences an unforgettable brush with the plant. She likes the show's underlying message of being careful what you wish for.
And I think a good show should entertain, but also be very thought-provoking and leave you exiting the theater wondering or thinking ahead.
The musical features over 20 actors, some reprising their roles from last time. It also highlights the talents of about a dozen local musicians. Although the orchestra has collaborated with past Kenai Performers productions, this is the first time they've played for this show. Kent Peterson, orchestra conductor, says it's challenging to find a balance between playing too loud and too soft.
It's kind of crazy when they do all this work, and then they turn it over to me now for the show, and it's like I could really mess it up or make it good, you know? So it's a little stressful.
And actors say working with a live orchestra is also challenging. Luke Burgess plays the role of Seymour, assistant of the plant shop. Burgess says he hopes the show will do more than just entertain audiences.
you know, I want them to be able to go away from the show, seeing that people can really work together well and that, you know, you can do a lot of fun things whenever the community and stuff comes together.
Director Zach Schessler says family members of the cast and crew have helped build set pieces. Her husband built the antagonistic plant last time the Kenai performers staged Little Shop of Horrors. It's been refurbished after it sat in a backyard in Nikiski for over a decade. In Soldotna, I'm Hunter Morrison.
The sound of Inupiaq drumming and dancing lasted in Ukiagvik for 6 days last week. Dancers from a dozen North Slope villages gathered for a biannual festival, Kiviak. Alona Nyden with the Alaska Desk reports on the festivities and what the event means to residents.
Susan Patkatak was not allowed to participate in Inupiaq dancing growing up. But last week, the 19-year-old performed in front of hundreds of people and received a standing ovation. It was a new dance she created that told a story of reconnecting to the tradition.
It's about how I wasn't allowed to dance when I was younger.
Patkatak is a member of Bear Dancers, one of 11 dance groups that took part in Kiviak. The event, also known as the Messenger Feast, brought together at least 700 participants. It included a running race, gift-giving, sharing indigenous food, and, most importantly, Inupiaq dancing. For performers like David Elahguak, it was a chance to reconnect with relatives and friends and uplift each other through the traditional art form.
It's like a healing part of us for coming out of the long, dark winter days. It brings us joy so that for the rest of the year we can carry it on into all the things that we do culturally.
Kiviak is a long-time tradition held during the years of successful harvests, when coastal Inupiaq tribes would trade their catch and products with their inland neighbors. The fastest runners would travel to the neighboring villages to invite people to the celebration. The tradition was discontinued in the early 20th century because the church viewed Inupiaq dancing as pagan. The festival finally restarted in the late 80s, Alahguak says.
And it's just a good gathering time. It's something we've been doing for thousands and thousands of years, and we wouldn't not want it to stop because it's so strong.
This year's acts included traditional ceremonial dances, like the box drum dance performed by Wainwright and Utqiagvik groups. The legend behind it describes the mother eagle teaching the Inupiaq people to drum and celebrate. The event also featured some brand new dances, including the one from Patkatak with the Bear Dancers. Patkatak only started dancing 2 years ago, and for a while it was hard for her to be left out of the practice. The lyrics of the song she performed at the recent festival describe the joyful feeling of being a part of the dancing tradition.
We create songs and dances to express ourselves and to express our stories.
Patkatak dedicated her dance to elders and everyone else who yearns to reconnect to their culture. In Anchorage, I am Alona Nyden.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Madeline Rose, Adeline Baxter, Chris Clint, Wesley Early, and Alona Nyden in Anchorage. Claire Strempel, Eric Stone, and Clarice Larson in Juneau, Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue, and Hunter Morrison in Soldotna. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News, weekdays on your local public radio station.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media. Thank you.
on through, babe. And if I take the chance of seeing you again, I just don't know what I would do, baby. And sometimes I think I'm gonna be just fine. All I gotta do is go through it, babe. And then I hear those voices in the back of my mind, over and over and over, that I blew it, baby.
You may never get another chance.
You had the flaw, and you knew it. You can't blame it on your circumstance. Gonna have to forget you, babe.
Cause you broke my heart, left it out in the rain. And you'd do the same again if I let you, babe. I would give anything to hold you in my arms, but you know I can't do that, baby. I guess I'll have to live with the choice that I have made. Even though deep down I still suspect that I'm losing. You had one chance and you blew it.
Too sexy for my love. Too sexy for my love. Love's going to leave me.
The world is a vampire.